Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Welcome once again to an episode of Dudes on Hockey. We are up to episode 29, otherwise known as the Jimmy Waite edition.
Wow.
Of Dudes on Hockey.
Wow.
Dude, you got any other number 29s in Sharks history up your sleeve?
I do. I knew you were going to ask me this.
Okay.
So, another number 29, the ever popular Dean Kolstad.
Very, very, very good, dude.
Thank you.
I didn't have that on the list I was going to mention. Of course, one would have to mention Vesa Toskala.
Of course.
A past number 29. My pick for the first Shark to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, Mike Vernon. Mike Vernon was number 29. And not to be left out, the current number 29, Ryan Clough, who had a goal tonight. So he's playing well.
Yeah, they're no Dean Kolstad, Mike. But
nope. He doesn't quite measure up to Dean Kolstad. But he had another power play goal tonight, leads the team in power play goals. Ryan Clough is the power play master.
He hears dollar signs every time.
Yeah.
He hits the back of that net. He's getting increasingly
expensive.
More expensive.
Yeah. That's going to be a topic we are going to have to dig into at length in a future show. But so much happened this past week. It should be mentioned that the Sharks are now officially over the halfway point in the season. And amazingly, and I can't imagine ever thought I would say this, is that the Sharks are undefeated in regulation at home through half of the season. They are 20-0-2 after the extreme beatdown of the Tampa Bay Lightning this evening.
It wouldn't be a Dudes on Hockey show unless I asked this question, Mike.
Okay.
With beer in hand, how many points do the Sharks have?
Sharks have 69 points.
Yeah! That's right, dude.
69
they
points.
Do. We're just stating facts here, folks.
We're just stating facts. They are 32.
How many points do the Ducks have, Mike?
The Ducks have 49 points.
Yeah! Makes me giggle.
I think you said in a previous show, it may have been a couple months back, that the Sharks would have a double-digit lead on the Ducks in January. And that wish has come true in a big way. They are 20 points ahead of the Ducks.
Keep on trucking, baby.
We're going to be talking about the Pacific Division later on in the show because it's an important topic to discuss, because that could shape up not only what happens this season in playoff situations, but also what we might look forward to future seasons. But let's speak of the three games. The Sharks were undefeated since our last podcast. They went 3-0 after the unfortunate loss to Calgary.
Which neither of us thought was going to happen.
We didn't call it quite like that, but Calgary was a team that was on the rise at the time. They were streaking, and they put the Sharks down hard in the first period, and the Sharks could not recover. They outshot Calgary in the second and third periods, but it wasn't enough. And the Sharks did rebound, to their credit. They beat an Oilers team that's always pretty tough at home, and they beat Vancouver, that is certainly no slouch. They had lost badly the night before, and they had the return of Matt Sundin. It was his third game in a Vancouver Canucks jersey, and I'm sure they were all pumped. The fans were pumped, and I'm sure they were all excited to have him there. He got a goal and a standing ovation. Why would you give him a stand? He got a goal. He's a standing ovation. He got his first goal in January, and you're going to give the guy a standing ovation.
Mike, I think that you're confusing that for people actually just leaving because they were disgusted. And the result.
I mean, they gave him an extended ovation. I mean, here's a guy, that contract offer was on the table in August or September, and he didn't take it. Think of where Vancouver might be if Sundin was on that team since the beginning of the season. I mean, he's going to be shaking off some rust here for a few games at least. Sure, he had a goal. That's great. But the fact is that, frankly, he might have cost them some points in the standings, and for that, they're going to give him a standing ovation. To me, it seemed a little weird.
They're hockey mad up there.
I suppose.
And, you know, I think for a team that right now, with Luongo out and now throwing Jason LaBarbera out there in the pipes, that Sundin is exactly sort of the picture of hope that they need right now, as they're kind of scrapping in that division with Calgary for who's going to end up coming on top of them. Calgary's pulled, you know, 7 points ahead now with this recent streak. But Vancouver's still very much alive, and it'll be interesting to see the long-term effect that Sundin has on the team and on Pavel Dimitra's game. Please, God. Oh, my God. I'm ready to drop him. But that's all I have to say about fantasy.
He's fantasy
I did
death.
Beat Mike's ass this week. Thanks, Mike.
You're welcome. But I got some Devin Setoguchi points tonight, so I'm back in it.
You're not playing me, so it doesn't matter.
I guess that's true.
I'm streaking. Speaking of streaking, fantasy, look out.
That's right.
Here I come.
There he comes.
Ron Wilson's prostate.
Ron Wilson's prostate is seeing a meteoric rise in the fantasy standings.
Just to clarify, that's my team's name.
Yeah, right.
We're not actually speaking of the poor man's
prostate. Enlarged or not, as it might be.
Hi-o.
Hey, now. But, yeah, so, you know, we can... let's talk a little bit about the Tampa game, because it's the most recent game. I'm sure it's going to be fresh on the listeners' minds, since they're going to be listening to this on Wednesday, and the game will have been the previous night. The thing about Tampa, I mean, what can you say? They suck. they absolutely suck. I thought there was a couple moments where maybe they might scratch their way back within distance of putting a little fear into the Sharks, but that didn't happen. And at the end of the game, we saw the Lightning completely lost their composure. They went absolutely ape, and you couldn't understand what they were doing. I mean, they were down by 6 and taking stupid penalties. Like, what was happening?
Does John Tortorella have a voodoo doll?
He might.
Do you think in a room somewhere, Tortorella and Barry Melrose and Jay Feaster,
right,
and Dan Boyle just go into a corner and laugh?
It's very possible.
They all got out. This is a joke. And you got to blame ownership here.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the roster is a terrible fit, and
the whole team is just a mess.
The blue line is horrific.
Yes.
It's the worst blue line in the NHL, and if someone disagrees with me, you know, you need to point out which one's worse than this. And what they threw out tonight was not even their... It was worse than normal.
Right. Because
they didn't even have Paul Ranger
They didn't
tonight.
Have Paul Ranger, who's good.
But, so they're throwing out some poor kid named Kevin Quick, who, oh man.
Yeah.
And then they've got, you know, the lesser Mahalik running around out there. Eminger. Mm-hmm. Come on. This is a joke. And they sure can't use Dan Boyle.
Speaking of which, we have an email to that effect, who David sent us an email. Or was it David? Or was it the other email? No. There was the email.
It's the email we got tonight, just right when we sat down to do the show.
That's right. It was David, who is a first-time emailer. He sent an email to questions@dudesonhockey.com. And he said, after the 7-1 pounding they took tonight, I look back at Ty Wishart's stats to see if there was anything for them to look forward to, and there isn't. Wishart has 1 goal, 2 assists, 13 PIMs, and is +4 in 34 games with the Norfolk Admirals of the AHL. So in the end, they basically traded Dan Boyle for 2 no-name guys from Philly, a lame duck D prospect, a high first-round 09 pick, which is basically a second-rounder, and a 2010 fourth-round pick. This has to be the most lopsided trade since the Joe Thornton steal. How can anyone call Doug Wilson a bad GM? I really don't get it. Well, the first point is you're absolutely right, David. I mean, this has certainly turned out to be an amazing trade for the Sharks. Why the Sharks then turned around and traded Matt Carl for nobody's, I don't understand. You're right. I mean, Dan Boyle has to be thanking his lucky stars right now. And Tampa is in a horrible mess that they're not going to get out of. And I guess their only hope could be to tank the rest of the season and try to get a high draft pick, because clearly their current number one draft pick isn't doing squat. Stamkos may have had a goal tonight, but he is certainly no difference maker out there.
He's not ready.
No.
He's not ready yet at all. And the knock on him coming out was that maybe he isn't physically ready, and clearly that's the case. Melrose was right.
Yes. It makes me laugh and smile because people like to take a lot of shots at Barry Melrose, but pretty much all the stuff he said after he got fired about the team, maybe some of those things said in anger, but pretty much everything he said turned out to be true.
So Ty Wishart is like Zdeno Chara but without the offensive ability and in a skirt. It seems like we heard that this guy, we heard that this guy not good enough to make the junior national team. He was going to be a bust. He's soft. He's this, he's that. We kind of ignored it because we were hoping he might pan out, but it seems like that was all too true as well. And the evil genius, Doug Wilson, once again, you know, I think he smelled that this kid might not work out, and he was able to get some amazing value for a prospect that, I mean, if he was any good at all,
he would be with the big club right now.
Why isn't he playing on the, they stink.
Because he isn't any good. That's why he's not with the big
club. So why not let him stink up here? They got to see.
I guess.
They got to see.
Clearly he's not doing very well in the AHL. Why make him even worse in the NHL? He might learn even worse habits up here. But keep in mind, the Dan Boyle trade wasn't just for Dan Boyle. It was also for Brad Lukowich, keep in mind.
Oh, yeah.
Who was probably better than anybody else that Tampa Bay got out of that deal.
How many NHL games has Wishart played this year?
Two?
One.
One game.
One game. He was a minus one. He played January 3rd against Carolina. They ran him out there for 7 minutes and 53 seconds. Good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And he was so good that they scratched him and then set him down.
Right, right.
Ouch. Bye-bye, Ty. See you later. Hey, listen, one more thing about Tampa Bay, Mike.
Yep.
What do you think? Le Cavalier, toast? Is he gone? Does he want out? I mean, he signed like a 50,000-year deal to stay there until he's, you know, wearing Depends. If you were Vinny, do you want out?
I would think so. I mean, I don't know how deep his roots are in the community. You know, supposedly he's very active in charity work in that area, and he has family ties there now. He's sort of put roots down. To me, that would be the only reason that he would want to stay, because there's certainly nothing to be positive about that team. And, you know, him being traded to the Canadiens, which is the current rumor du jour, thank you, would be a blessing for him hockey-wise. And the reason why they might trade him now is because he has a no movement clause that would kick in July 1st when his extension kicks in. So that's why they can move him now without his permission.
You know, we've seen to Tampa, though, that doesn't seem to really matter.
Right. Then they'll just threaten
him. They'll move you anyways.
Yeah.
I would not be stunned if this happened. In my gut, I feel like it's going to happen, because they have to start over completely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of these players, I think, are going to be gone. Tampa's just got to blow it all up.
Speaking of another prospect, actually, we were talking about Ty Wishart a moment ago, who was once sort of the crown jewel of the Sharks' defensive prospect core. But now that crown jewel is a guy named Nick Petrecki, who is playing for Boston College. And I actually, my hockey obsession went to a new level this past week.
What'd you do, Mike?
I TiVo'd Boston College versus Vermont, and I watched the entire game.
Tell me about it.
So I could scout Nick Petrecki.
I want to know, what is the scouting report on Mr. Petrecki?
Okay, so Nick Petrecki took two penalties.
I like him already.
Which was awesome.
Were they good penalties?
Yeah, they were. The first penalty, he took a slash, which I thought was maybe a little marginal. The second penalty he got because he was obviously 10 times stronger than the other guy. And if there's one sort of thing to sum up Nick Petrecki, that is it. And the announcers mentioned it during the game, because a guy came up, hit Petrecki. Petrecki didn't move at all. Petrecki turns around and shoves the guy so hard, he puts him right on his keister, and his head almost hits the ice because he shoved him so hard. Nick Petrecki is in a league of his own in terms of physical capability. He's a very mobile defenseman for a very big guy, which is nice. His skating is fluid behind the net. He makes a pretty good first pass. I think he's a very good skater for his size, and he is obviously very physical. He takes penalties. The thing is, he doesn't play any power play time at all. They do not put him on the power play at all, but he is on the first unit kill every time. So that is his strength. He is Boston College for... It doesn't mean he doesn't have any offensive capability, but I think that seems to be the book on Petrecki, is he is going to be sort of Doug Murray, but taller.
Yeah, when you're describing him, you know who he actually sounds like to me is Mike Komisarek.
That's right. That might be
who is a maybe a little more of a skilled version of
you mean
Murray.
The all-star Mike Komisarek?
Listen, if you can have two guys like that on your team and surround them with skill players like Boyle and and Vlasic seems to be blossoming a little bit in that area. You know, that sounds fantastic.
Right. But Nick Petrecki, I can understand maybe why the U.S. team didn't want him at juniors, because he doesn't really have offensive upside, or at least he doesn't play in those situations for Boston College. He seems to have some pretty good composure with the puck. He doesn't seem to panic with it. He seems to be in pretty good position most of the time. Again, I only saw one game, so this isn't really that great of a scouting report. But the fact is he is so much bigger and stronger than everybody else. I mean, there is never a time where he gets muscled off of any position that he wants. So I think his prospects for, you know, being in camp and maybe making some waves next year are pretty good, depending on what else happens. You know, another year of seasoning to get him some judgment, because he's not just going to light the lamp. He's going to have to, his NHL career is going to be predicated on him making good decisions with and without the puck and being in the right position all the time. So, and of course being physical. So
yep. I still 60 like games at Boston College in his career, and he has 17 points and 174 penalty minutes.
Yeah, pretty awesome. And he's only a sophomore, keep in mind. He is only a sophomore at Boston College. So I definitely look forward to big things from Nick Petrecki.
Yeah, and there's no rush.
Yeah, there's no rush. There's no rush. Okay, so let's go actually to another email, because we got two this week. Chris, who has emailed us before, Chris from Boston. Thank you for emailing us, Chris.
You must be seeing some pretty good hockey right now, Chris.
Yeah.
Do you watch the Bruins? I want to know.
Yeah.
Email us.
Yeah.
Let us know. Are you a dual fan? You got to be enjoying what the Bruins are doing out there. It's pretty impressive. Although Kessel now has mono.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a bummer. Mm-hmm. I hate to malign the Sharks. This isn't actually maligning them. But if I had to choose a single original six team to root for, I might choose the Bruins. Even before they were good. Even before this year. Yeah, I just like the Bruins somehow. I don't know what it is, but I just kind of like them. Anyway. Chris says, two questions today. One, what do you think about breaking up the Thornton and Marleau line versus keeping them together? I think that putting them together has been a real key to the Sharks' success this season. Marleau seems to have some defensive responsibilities off Thornton's shoulders, allowing him to play the offensive game he is capable of. The speed of Marleau and Boyle lets them play four players deep and only one back, almost like a power play, even though they are 5-on-5. And he has another question, which we'll get to maybe a little later in the show, but is definitely a question that we need to cover. So what do you think about that line switching thing? We certainly bashed it last week because it seemed like they switched the lines and then the Sharks got crushed in the first period against Calgary. I guess it could have been a coincidence, but maybe not.
Yeah. Since they did that, you know, Joe Thornton had an assist in Edmonton, two assists in Vancouver, and two goals and an assist tonight.
Right.
Is that a coincidence? He had no points in the Calgary game.
That's right.
Nothing. So, no coincidence, Mike.
These guys play well together. These guys, and an interesting point is that Joe again was dominant in the faceoff circle tonight, and they had a really interesting little question about that in the broadcast. I think it was the Vancouver game, and they asked Jamie Baker, why is Joe getting kicked out of the faceoff circle so much? And the answer is because Marleau is there to take the draw if Joe gets kicked out. And that allows Joe to really try and time the drop so well. And that's why he's so good in the faceoff dot, really because Marleau is there. And the reason why, one of the big reasons why the Sharks are so good in the dot this year is probably because Marleau is there to back up Joe. And Joe is just killing it in the dot. It is unbelievable. Again tonight. I mean, the funny thing is the opening faceoff. I still remember it. Opening faceoff, Joe just completely teabags LeCavalier on the faceoff. I mean, it wasn't even close. He just completely wins it super clean right back to the D, and that was the beginning of the game. And I just laughed out loud because it was so funny. But I think you're right, Chris. You know, switching the lines if you want to, I guess I don't really understand it, but Thornton and Marleau, you got to keep those guys together.
No, it's extremely complimentary, and you know. There's nothing wrong with how the Sharks are playing. You know, they get a little banged up in the last couple of weeks, but why break up a good thing? All the lines, the top two lines are really clicking. It's just, you got to think it's just going to get better when JR and Torrey Mitchell and you know who come. But we won't talk about him yet. Not yet.
Okay. I fixed it this week, so it's not going to keep playing. But we'll get to that soon enough. But Lukowicz is going to come back, and you know, there's plenty of other highlights to happen later on in the season. We haven't even seen Torrey Mitchell play a game yet.
Right. Now, when Jody Shelley comes back, which is, you know, hopefully, I'm assuming it's going to be Thursday against Calgary.
Yeah, I hope so.
Does Jocelyn continue to play, or is Frankenstein moving back to the blue line?
Are we going to do the Frankenstein topic now?
It's alive!
Let's talk about this big boys play.
Okay, let's talk about... Okay, because this is the second half. Chris's second question is, what is Semenoff doing out there? Chris, tell us how you really feel. Thanks to Semenoff, we now have the most laughable enforcer in the league. It seems like someone said, hey, while Shelly's out, you're going to do his job, and no one bothered to teach him how to fight. I would also say that Jocelyn has played head and shoulders over Semenoff on defense. I'm all for letting young players develop in the AHL, but come on. Thanks, students. Keep up the good work. Chris in Boston. Yes, I think that the fighting thing point is well taken. I would say the most charitable thing I could say about Semenoff fighting is he doesn't seem to have much of a taste for it. He sort of drops the gloves and then seems to decide, maybe this wasn't the best idea in the world. I'm just going to wrestle this guy down.
He had a fight in Edmonton against Jason Strudwick, who is... has 35 penalty minutes. He's not exactly the towering inferno of bruisers. That was pretty bad too. It was another like hug and fall.
Right. I can't say any of the scraps that Semenoff has done in the last couple of weeks have been anywhere close to noteworthy. Maybe he throws a couple of short punches and then that's it. And tonight was unfortunately no exception. So you know, it's hard to drop your gloves, period. He deserves a certain amount of credit for that, but he certainly earns minus points for being, you know, one of the more ridiculous fighters I've ever seen. I mean, usually that guys drop, they want to drop because they want to beat the other guy's ass. And Semenoff seems to drop because he figures this is what he's supposed to do at this point, and let me just get out of here.
It's out of obligation almost,
yes.
Right?
It seems like that. He seems resigned to do it. But you're absolutely right. And speaking of Semenoff, we did have the poll question, which is, you know, should the Sharks A, ship him out, or B, keep him because he's a passable seventh defenseman or 14th forward or whatever? And you know, this isn't a lot of people responding to the poll, and how dare you, dudes on hockey listeners, for not responding to our poll? But it was 6-1 for ship him. So,
and I swear I didn't vote six times.
I didn't vote either.
I didn't vote either at all.
I didn't vote. But I probably would vote to ship him. The thing about Jocelyn is, I agree with you. Jocelyn made some serious errors in the Edmonton game, but I'm going to chalk that up to nerves. And I think that was, I don't know if it was his first game. It might have been his second game, but Jocelyn really made some kind of bad mental errors. He looked really jittery, nervous out there, sort of panicky. But he settled down against Vancouver, which was good to see. And, you know, he's not embarrassing. Right. And I guess if you're going to have a seventh defenseman, that's really all you can hope for. And unfortunately, Semenoff appears to be embarrassing.
Now, has he been less embarrassing as a forward?
He had an assist tonight.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. To his credit.
I guess so. Yeah. So I guess it's less embarrassing because usually the forwards, the fourth line is less exposed than defensemen are.
So the likelihood of him sticking around now that he appears to be versatile is probably high.
I'm using air quotes when I say versatile.
But, I don't know, man. Well, all I can say is everybody get healthy soon so we don't have to watch this tree trunk on skates.
Hey, Ryan Gardner says he's an A, grade A.
Are we opening up this door?
If you'd like.
Oh, man. I mean, myself I wasn't going to read that blog anymore.
Right.
And I couldn't help it. I don't know what happened to me the other day.
You like to torture yourself.
I saw it. I read it. An A for Semenoff. He graded the players on their effort at the halfway point.
Yeah.
And he gave Semenoff an A, and he gave Doug Murray a C.
Yeah, I don't really get that.
What?
I mean, that's crazy enough. The one thing that was just blew my mind, like I thought my mind, like I was actually going to, it was actually going to fall out of my skull, was he said that Semenoff had the heaviest shot on the team. And I'm like, hello, Rob Blake. Rob Blake with 11 goals, all like half of which at least are slap shots. Come on.
Yeah.
That is an indefensible statement.
Erhoff's got to be a close second.
I mean, you can say that Semenoff tries hard and that's great, but I mean, come on, heaviest shot on the team. Please, please, please. Oh, I couldn't believe that. We should really get off this topic because it's not a negative thing. You know, the Sharks are playing great. This is a one sort of point of amusement, frankly, for us.
Yeah.
With Seminole.
We don't hate the guy.
We don't hate the guy.
We love all the Sharks.
Of course we do.
We're just being funny.
We just don't love them all equally. And, you know, it's sort of fun to pick on a guy. And I don't feel that bad about it because he can take it. He's making a lot of money. So there you go. Let's talk about the All-Star game. We also talked about that last week. Real quick.
Boy, we messed up on that, huh?
We certainly did. But the thing I didn't expect was that they were going to take a guy from every team. I mean, come on. Milan Hayduk, please.
Do they have to do that? Was this,
No, that is not a binding rule. They just decided to do it. So this Keith Tkachuk, Mike Modano, and Milan Hayduk are all there. Patrick Marleau, with his performance tonight, is now going to be in the top 10 in the NHL in scoring, and he is not going to be in the All-Star.
It's embarrassing.
Game. Yes.
Maybe 5 years ago, that would have been a great All-Star roster you just named.
That's right.
It's, for this year, that's a joke. Sedin should be there.
Yes.
Hossa should be there.
Zetterberg
or Marleau.
Yes.
Marlowe's at the top of that list, frankly, and I don't think I'm being a homer by saying that. And, you know, even though I have Rick Nash on my fantasy team,
and
I'm slightly hoping that he doesn't make it. And I think if he doesn't, as it isn't able to play,
mm-hmm. Marlowe should get the nod.
Marlowe should go.
Yeah.
Now, if Luongo can't play, is Nabby next in line?
Maybe, yeah. I think so.
Mason's playing at the young people's game.
Well, Mason, I think Mason is having a pretty amazing year so far. But the thing about Marleau is actually I made a if I do say so myself, an extremely compelling case for Marleau for the Selke
mm-hmm.
this year.
Tell us about it.
This past week on the radio show, and Marleau is, believe it or not, if you you know, we all know plus minus is even strength only, but if you count a power play goal against as a minus. And a shorthanded goal as a plus. So that is, you know, extremely not in your favor. Marleau is still even. He has been on the ice for 5 shorthanded goals and has only been on the ice for 5 power play goals against. He is even on the kill, which is amazing.
That's awesome.
He's the only player in the NHL who plays top 4 shorthanded minutes for their team to be that way. And there's some other good stats for Marleau defensively. But to me, I think Marleau might be a finalist for the Selke this year. He might win it.
He has manned up. And looks like he's going to crack the 80-point mark. At least he might even get to 90.
You can't say enough good things about Patrick Marleau this year. Absolutely.
Every bad thing I've ever said about him, I take it back.
I take it back, too.
His game has risen to a whole new level under McClellan. And that's one reason why I think McClellan, you know, halfway point, he's my coach of the year.
Yeah. Well, you know, I picked Claude Julien just because Boston came out of nowhere. With the same players they had last year, and all of a sudden they're kicking ass. I just don't understand it. But I'm still picking them to fade a little bit in the second half, but I've been plenty wrong before. But we need to now go.
You know what time it is. It's Lemieux Watch 2009!
Lemieux Watch continues, dude.
Claude Lemieux played his 19th and 20th games of the season. Yep. For Worcester this year, he had 2 assists this week. He was a plus 2, 4 shots.
Very good.
That means he's got 10 points in 20 games, plus 4, 20 PIMs. Mike,
yeah.
He's coming.
The countdown. The countdown.
He is coming.
It just wouldn't be a podcast without Asia. But yeah, so Claude Lemieux could be joining us at any moment.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. But we need to finish the show, the last part of the show. We're going to do a little State of the Pacific because we mentioned earlier that the Sharks are 20 points ahead of the Ducks. Who would have called it at the halfway point? Ducks, I thought we were going to be tough. And the Sharks are 20 points ahead. Phoenix is only, I believe, 2 points behind. The Kings are fairly close. I mean, it's... So I know you had some stuff that you wanted to say about the Pacific Division, so have at it. What do you got?
Well, let's talk about Phoenix first as far as, I mean, if the season ended right now, Phoenix would actually be the 7th seed.
Mm.
Mike, what do you make of the financial situation in Phoenix? I know that I read something about they're going to miss out on some of this revenue sharing that they thought they were going to get a part of. that's they laid off some of their office staff. I smell a fire sale coming in Phoenix.
Right.
I don't see how they can afford to support some of these high salary players that they have. Is it possible that they're going to turn around and trade Olli Jokinen, maybe try and move Jovanovski, and even...
I think Shane Doan might be moved.
Well, God, I mean, he is the face of the franchise there.
I know.
Shane Doan, you think Shane Doan is the one who could move?
In terms of value in return, Shane Doan is the guy. If they want to move...
He's got three more years on his deal.
That's right. So if you want to move a great player that is really, you know, overlooked since he plays for Phoenix, and he would be a superstar on a Canadian team, for instance,
mm-hmm.
He would be, you know, Alex Tanguay times five if he went to Montreal.
Right.
And, I think it's very possible. I think Phoenix, unfortunately... from what little I do understand about the Phoenix situation, it seems they negotiated a horrible deal with the building that they're in. They're not receiving, if I have this right, and I may not, they're not receiving parking money, they're not receiving concessions money, or they're receiving a very small slice of that money. And usually that's a big chunk of change.
Gretzky knows business.
Well, I'm sure Gretzky didn't negotiate that deal, but whatever the lease contract they have with the jobbing.com arena... they are getting a real short end of the stick in terms of money, and it's hamstrung the team, and they're in deep, deep trouble. I mean, apparently the NHL has already sort of stepped in with this kind of stuff. I mean, Phoenix could be in big, big trouble, not on the ice, but off as well, and that could affect all the stuff that's happening on the ice with all these good young players, and now they may have to trade the good veterans that they do have.
The Ducks is a huge, gigantic question mark after this year.
Mm-hmm.
What are the Anaheim Ducks going to look like
next
year?
They have one defenseman signed after this year.
So
Chris Pronger.
This is my prediction.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Brian Burke is going to get one of his young players back from Anaheim and in return give them one of his defensemen. He'll end up shipping Kabina or Cabrera.
Interesting.
To Anaheim, and he'll get... I think he's going to try and get Corey Perry.
Wow. Wow. That'd be interesting.
Salaries that, match.
That's a good call.
You know, you've got Bobby Ryan, who's really stepped up to the plate.
They will not trade Bobby
Ryan.
No,
I'm saying you've got Bobby Ryan, who's stepped up to the plate. So does that then make Kunitz or Perry expendable, Mike?
It could. It seems like, I don't know if the Ducks have a huge problem with salary, especially if they're going to be losing so much of it next year with Niedermeyer off the books. Pronger's going to be the only guy left.
You got to figure Boschman's going to resign. But they've got a problem. I mean, luring free agents to the West Coast is a problem. And they got Niedermeyer, but that was because he wanted to play with his bro. Okay? It's been a problem. You know, their big free agent splash is Brendan Morrison.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Yeah.
Wee. So it's not looking good for the Ducks, which also makes me feel warm and fuzzy. Dallas, we don't even need to talk about them. So long term, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
In my eyes, the biggest threat to the Sharks?
The Los Angeles Kings.
Which is freaky to say.
I absolutely agree with you, though. I think Los Angeles Kings could be good in 2 years. 2 years, they could be really good. Drew Doughty, he's unfortunately in sort of the wasteland of LA right now, so he may not get the Calder appreciation that he probably deserves, especially since Mason is having such an amazing year so far. But I think Doughty is a slam dunk finalist, at least right now. So, a couple years... Johnson's going to be healthy again. Hopefully Kopitar, Brown, O'Sullivan, all these guys get better, get older. They could be scary. They could really be scary. If they can finally find a goaltender, and maybe this kid Jonathan Quick might be the one. If they can find a decent goaltender, then it could be the Sharks and the Kings, you know, beat LA, you know, beat LA.
Yeah.
It could be that again in a couple of years.
Be very interesting to see. Can you imagine if Brian Burke is able to somehow get Bouwmeester for a package of young players and then turn around and trade a defenseman and get one of Anaheim's forwards? How instantly that team would be transformed.
Yeah. God. Wow. That could be interesting. Then Ron Wilson will be back in the driver's seat.
Ooh.
Well, we're running out of time, so that's going to have to do it for this week of Dudes on Hockey. We'll have plenty to talk about again next week about the Sharks. You can make sure to send us your questions and read our blog at sharks.hockeyanalysis.com. Go Sharks!
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air?
email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.